This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Summertime provides the opportunity for a wide variety of topics. And because the legislature is not in session, and this is sort of the quiet period in the election cycle in a lot of ways, we haven't done as many legislative-related interviews, but we've got one today. State Senator Floyd Prezansky on. Floyd, thanks for being here today.
Al, thank you very much for having me.
So, first of all, in the summertime, kind of give people an overall sense of what the schedule is for a lawmaker from Salem.
Well, the schedule is pretty abbreviated because we, are, in this case, are coming out of a session. In this particular case, being an even number year, we had the short session. We had the elections that occurred for the primary in May, and then traditionally we've seen June, July, and August as a kind of a reset time for a lot of individuals, since it is a citizen legislature, to basically get back in their communities, and be with their families and not really be tied up in a lot of activities. But with that said, as you can imagine, with legislative days now happening throughout the year, there's much more coordination that is needed to ensure that we have covered whatever topics we're going to be covering, and then dealing with stuff that's on the, let's say, on the front burner, such as the Public Defense Services system in Oregon, which we can go in a little more detail in a minute. But there are reasons why we see people burning the midnight oil in the summer, even though the legislature is not actually in session, because of just work that needs to be completed as we move forward to our next set of legislative days, as well as our next session.
And, in fact, when are those legislative days taking place, and what's in the works for them?
All right, so our next set is will be in September. And I believe it's Tuesday, if I got it correct. I think it's the 19th or 20th of September will be what's known as Task Force Day. We have a certain type of, let's say, more formal work groups that meet as task force. They will be meeting on that date. And then for the rest of us that are not on task forces, we would be starting on the 20th, Wednesday the 20th, and going 20th, 21st, and 22nd, so Wednesday through Friday of that week. This is where the various committees that are established as the interim committees, they meet and hold sessions, and I shouldn't probably use sessions, I should say hearings, to take in information on specific topics that each of those committees might be looking at. We're in the process with the judiciary committees. We've been meeting separately over the last couple of years, where normally in the cycle during the interim period, we would meet together. And we have a new chair on the House side of judiciary, and I'm working with him to see if we can't bring both committees together, because I find that to be much more beneficial and, I'm going to say, fruitful in the way of having members work together from both chambers, and also making certain the presentations that we're going to be duplicating, if we do them separately, can be done more efficiently at one time, and we can have a more, let's say, broader discussion, including all members of those two committees.
I would imagine that it makes a lot of sense from the efficiency side to do that, because otherwise you come in with two separate proposals that may be similar. You've got to go back and forth between the two chambers and get them to ultimately be one.
That's true, but I think even more fruitful or beneficial for efficiency, we don't have the same committees or the two committees hearing the exact same topic, such as, let's just say, we were doing an overview on the Public Defense Services. You wouldn't parade in both sets of witnesses to each of those hearings. You'd have just one hearing with all the witnesses. Staff time is cut back, so it's much, much more efficient for us to do it this way. And I think it gives the members from the House and the Senate the opportunity to hear each other as to what they find important. And as you're saying, Kyle, it actually helps us direct the focus, so when we're going into actual session work, Maybe we've addressed some of these things that wouldn't have been known except for having both committees meeting at the same time with those questions and answers being presented to everyone at the same time.
One thing that pops up in my head as you're talking about legislative days, we're in an election cycle, November general election. Some people that are in now will ultimately be voted out. How does that work? How does that kind of factor in with the elections?
Well, I mean, it's one of those situations that if the individual is not seeking re-election, then they're already on a glide path or whatever you might want to say of exiting out. Most of those members that I've dealt with over the years still take an active part because they still have, many of them have issues they like to see go forward that hadn't been addressed while they're there. Others choose not to do much of anything because they're leaving and they don't really have that much on the table or in discussions to be an active part. But for the most part, we do see people not missing in action just because they may not be returning. Now, of course, for those who are returning, they have their hands full with not only their legislative duties, but also if they're in an election cycle, taking care of those needs as well. So you do get participation based on what is the priority of those individual members.
And it's interesting because you could have someone, and it could be from either party, be working on an idea, pushing for a proposal, hoping to be reelected. But then if they're not, then that puts that whole area back into a sort of a question mark zone because the person that replaces them may have different ideas.
Well, yes and no. The individual member who is still sitting as a member who may not be returning, my understanding, they can still get those they still have an opportunity to get those ideas drafted into legislation to be pre-session filed while they are still in session. And it isn't uncommon for a person who might be coming in for another person to discuss whatever that exiting member has done to try to work with them if they like those ideas. Now, of course, if this is on a partisan basis, maybe you don't have that discussion, but I've seen where someone has brought up something or that's been pre-session filed by a member who's no longer going to be there with the new member saying, hey, this was brought up by member so-and-so. I want to see this go forward on their behalf.
What are particular things that you're working on right now as you look ahead towards next year?
Well, the biggest thing we're working on right now is what we've known, for many of us have known, has been a significant issue that has not gotten the attention that it needs, and that's delivery of public defense services in the state. If you have been following or have caught some of the news, we have individuals that are sitting in custody who do not have representation. They do not have an attorney representing them. This is not an appropriate way for these type of cases to be handled. Clearly, when someone's liberty has been put in check and they're on ICE, meaning they're in custody, they need to have representation immediately. So myself and Representative Paul Evans, who is a member out of the Salem area, have been tasked as co-chairs of a public defense services work group to bring forward two pieces of legislation or two types of legislation, one for the immediate needs, which I just addressed as a concern, having people sitting in custody not being represented, as well as individuals who are not in custody that don't have representation because there's just not enough attorneys to go around. We are working to try to shore up quick fixes that would allow for the system to continue but not be as broken as it is. And at the same time, we're going with a work plan that will take us until 2023 to look at our current means of how we deliver these services to Oregonians and ensuring that what we currently are using is a model that can be sustained and can, in fact, deliver the services at the level we need, or should we be revamping and regrouping and restructuring our current system. Now, let me just say that right now, one of the biggest issues for me is that the agency that is in charge of getting public services out to individuals for defense services, I should say, they're in a scenario where they have just not been able to, let's say, get all of the, I think all of the attention they really need. They are currently in the judicial branch of government, where I personally believe that they should be in the executive branch under the control of the governor. And I believe that that will be one of the significant changes that will be made long term, is to remove that agency out of a judicial branch, which kind of almost like a almost a conflict when you got the judges, quote unquote, overseeing the public defenders. You know, our prosecutors through the district attorneys, they are state executive officers, so they're in the executive branch. And the deputy district attorneys, those individuals are hired through the county, but they're also in the executive branch. And so it really makes sense to have the defense services also in the executive branch, not the judicial branch. So that's one of the things that I know we'll be looking at changing.
How did we get to this point where we had this large a number of people essentially sitting on pause without representation?
Well, unfortunately, you have attrition, and we're in that stage where a lot of, quote-unquote, baby boomers are leaving their professions, including in defense services. And so that in itself is causing some of the problem. The other is, I'm going to call, lack of parity in pay. Individuals that represent Oregonians who have been charged with crimes make only a small amount. I'm going to say I believe the number is somewhere in the range about 60. I'm going to give a range because I'm going to say $60 to $80 an hour for individuals to be represented. Now, that may seem like a lot, and it is a lot to a lot of people, but when you start thinking about individuals that are trained and experienced lawyers that have 4 years in and they're only able to receive that type of benefit, and the private practice, they're bringing in probably two, three, four times as much per hour in their representation. So you can see where some individuals who may have the passion to do this work as a public defender, they lose that passion because, one, they can't afford to pay their bills, their schooling, their rent, food on the table, even for their kids. And they basically have to make decisions that says, I may like this work, I would love to be able to do that work, but I can't afford to do that work. So we're looking at how we revamp at the state level pay for individuals that are committed professionals to stay with that work and not basically move on to higher paying jobs, leaving these gaping holes, because as many people come out of school with the debt they have, they can't even sign up to do these type of representation. Plus, they don't have the experience that these that attorneys that are leaving.
Interesting. We'll talk more about that and other topics when we come back. State Senator Floyd Prezansky, the interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1249 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1250 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Lars Larson coming at 1. On tomorrow's program, we'll talk to R. Leon Noble, the Libertarian Party candidate for governor of Oregon. Democratic State Senator Floyd Prezansky on with us now, covering a number of legislative topics. Let's fast forward to the November election and Floyd, talk about exactly what's your situation in this election cycle?
My situation is very unique. It's actually unique to only myself this cycle. It's turned out that I have been able to receive the nomination of not only the Democratic Party, but also the Republican Party through the May primary. That happened because there was no one who signed up to run as a Republican in the 2022 election cycle, and it gave me the opportunity to reach out to Republicans that live within the new district and ask them to write my name in as their nominee. And I was successful in that effort and have received a confirmation from the Secretary of State that I am now the nominee of both the Democratic and Republican parties. So definitely is a unique situation. It has happened in the past for other individuals, this is the only Senate race that I know of that had this type of situation present itself. So I will be on the ballot as the nominee for both Democrats and Republicans for Senate District 4, and there is still the opportunity for minor party candidates to still be on the ballot as well. But that's the uniqueness of my situation.
Give us a quick look at how your district boundaries change starting next year.
It's very significant change. This has happened because of the census requirement of every 10 years. Then under each state, there's an obligation to try to have the political districts to be equal in size and population. Because of that, there's been a significant change because of the shift of population within the state of Oregon from the south to the north, and it's required the district I currently represent to be significantly overhauled, I guess. Where I currently have large portions of Lane and Douglas counties, I will lose all of my Douglas County constituents, and I also will be losing a significant part of the Lane County, eastern Lane County areas that I currently represent. The new district will be basically a large portion of east and west and south Eugene, all of Springfield, and then some outlying areas going south down I-5 corridor between I-5 and what's known as Lorain Highway down to the northern end, northwest end of Cottage Grove, but not Cottage Grove. So it really is shifting me back into a much more urban district as compared to me representing the largest landmass district west of the Cascades, which is the current Senate District 4.
What are your thoughts on the governor's race? Rather unique one this year.
It is. We've seen these before where you've had a viable third-party candidate. In this case, it's Betsy Johnson. Betsy was a Democratic senator, served with me in the Senate, and I believe our paths may have crossed in the House as well briefly. She is running as a non-affiliate individual, and she has significant money to fund her campaign, as many of us probably have seen many of her ads that she has put on TV and on cable. And, she's going to be a person that will have significant influence on both the major party candidates, the Democrat, Tina Kotek, and Christine Drayson, the Republican. I think that Betsy will draw from both parties to some level.
What about the summertime? Oftentimes you go out, you meet with folks at community fairs, things like that. We had a couple of years where that was pretty limited. What's on your schedule for this summer?
We're still trying to put that together. Be very frank with you. I know we want to say COVID's over and it's done with, but it's not. As we know right now, we have a variant that is really very, very infectious and is catching a lot of people, even those who are fully vaccinated and have their boosters, etc. So we're trying to figure out how best to be able to do some fair, county fair type of and local parade type events, but still have not come up with a scenario. Plus, the other thing for me is that knowing that the shift in the district is the way it is, I think it's very important not to be confusing a lot of people who are constituents as to who is or who will be representing them. And I've been encouraging the individuals that are seeking office for the House districts that made up a good portion of my old district, as well as the individuals running for the Senate portion of the district that I will no longer represent, to get more active and hopefully provide those opportunities. Now, we're going to see whether or not we can make it down for the Douglas County Fair. And it's only about 2.5 weeks from now. And that may be one of those opportunities. But again, we're watching to see how the COVID numbers are coming in and just the variants of exposures.
Jill, less than a minute left here on Inside Douglas County. As you look back over your long time in the legislature, is there any one thing that stands out that you're especially happy to have helped work on?
I think the happiest thing I've been able to do is this representation of this current Senate District 4, and that's really bringing in the perspectives of both urban and rural Oregonians and working together and getting people from those different geographic locations together to see how common interests and views we have on issues. We may have different ways of getting to the finish line, but knowing that we have those commonalities really brings people together, and that's what these work groups have really shown and demonstrated to me. How we get people together to communicate gives us a better opportunity to serve all of the people of Oregon.
Democratic State Senator Floyd Przanski, thanks for being on Inside Douglas County today.
Kyle, thank you very much. Hope you stay warm, cool, and hydrated.
All right, 1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.